Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about how the Keystone Pipeline affects missing and murdered Indigenous women, child care, and beaver dams as a potential habitat restoration tool. It's Tuesday, November 26th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Yellowstone National Park says it's making progress reducing the number of non-native lake trout. Rachel Kramer reports.
Park and contract crews caught and killed over 280,000 lake trout from Yellowstone Lake between May and October, according to a press release Friday. The total tally is less than last year and the year before that, which is a good thing. Catching fewer lake trout means the non-native fish population is shrinking, and the last genetically pure Yellowstone cutthroat trout population has a better chance of recovering. Yellowstone cutthroats are the linchpin in a complex food web that includes animals as small as zooplankton and as large as grizzly bears. When lake trout showed up in Lake Yellowstone in the 1990s and started feasting on cutthroats, the native fish population plummeted and the whole food web was disrupted. Through rigorous gill netting and millions of dollars, park staff and contractors have managed to catch and kill over 3 million adult lake trout since 2012, reducing the population by 70%. Yellowstone fisheries biologist Todd Cool said in earlier reporting that there are still probably about 500,000 adult lake trout in Yellowstone Lake, but the cutthroat population is on the upswing. A panel of expert fishery scientists in May estimated that at least 5 more years of aggressive gill netting and other suppression tactics are needed to get the lake trout population below 100,000. They emphasized that lake trout cannot be completely eradicated and will continue to require annual removal and monitoring in the future. Researchers have been experimenting with dropping plant-based pellets on spawning sites to smother lake trout eggs to knock out the next generation. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A new report says the Keystone XL pipeline would exacerbate the problem of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Montana and other Northern Plains states in the project's proposed path. Olivia Reingold reports.
4 out of 5 perpetrators of crimes relating to missing or murdered Indigenous women are not held accountable in the counties the pipeline would cross. That's according to the report co-authored by the Sovereign Bodies Institute. Anita Lucchese directs the Indigenous Research Collective that co-authored the report.
The rate of violence will be exceptionally high because these men, these workers, know that there already is a lack of justice.
She's talking about the hundreds of workers who had come from outside the community, away from their families, to work on the pipeline and live in what's been termed as man camps. The report cites documents from the United Nations and the U.S. State Department that link extractive industries to sex trafficking and exploitation of Native American women. But the report also features its own data collection, pulled from Lucchese's database of over 4,000 cases of missing and murdered women in Indian Country. She and her colleagues identified 411 cases of missing or murdered Indigenous women in the 4 states the pipeline would cross: Montana, the Dakotas, and Nebraska.
I would say that what's more disturbing for me is that we know that there's so many cases that we don't know about.
Lucchese says she hosted a recent training in Montana and that over 9 people came forward with stories of missing or murdered relatives. None of the accounts had been previously logged into law enforcement records. She says sometimes the only way to learn of new cases is to speak with the community, which is what she wants the State Department to do more of. In its recently updated draft environmental impact statement, the State Department says it invited nearly 70 tribes to participate in the NEPA process. That includes 5 tribal nations in Montana: the Blackfeet, Crow, Fort Peck, Chippewa Cree, and Fort Belknap tribes. In the draft, the State Department, which did not respond to requests for comment, says if built, the Keystone XL would have negligible to minor or even beneficial impacts on socioeconomics. TC Energy, the pipeline's owner, says it's taken numerous steps to ensure that both the community and its workers would be safe, including requiring every resident at the camps to sign and agree to a strict code of conduct. It also says there will be around-the-clock security. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
Olivia Reingold is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America Corps member. Yesterday, the elected body that regulates utilities in Montana temporarily rejected a controversial fee as part of a rate increase from the state's largest utility. Kayla DeRoche reports.
NorthWestern Energy's rate case includes a $6.5 million rate increase, which the Public Service Commission approved late last month. Monday afternoon, the PSC considered the next part of the rate case, which included what's called a demand charge. A demand charge is an extra fee based on a building's peak energy usage. It affects future NorthWestern customers who generate more energy than they use and who use net metering. Excess energy generation is also the concept behind net metering, but one that advocates say could save money for those who invest in solar energy units. Net metering takes extra energy from rooftop solar and feeds it back into the electric grid. That energy then returns to the homeowner later in the form of credits. Environmental advocates say a demand charge hurts net metering and therefore the use of clean energy. NorthWestern Energy has said in the past that the demand charge better reflects the cost of service. At Monday's meeting, Commissioner Tony O'Donnell proposed a motion to push the vote on net metering to a future date when and if the utility can provide them more information. The motion carried unanimously. Also at the meeting, the PSC considered NorthWestern Energy's request to charge ratepayers almost $24 million extra to cover costs the company incurred when it bought electricity on the open market in 2018, while Colstrip Unit 4 was shut down due to air pollution violations. The PSC voted to follow staff recommendations and investigate the case separately and to initiate that investigation at a later date. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Two top officials from the Trump administration offered support for one of the state's final remaining tribal water agreements last week. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
The Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes Water Compact narrowly passed the state legislature in 2015 after more than a decade of negotiation. It settles water rights in and around the Flathead Reservation. Now it needs to pass in the U.S. Congress. In a November 18th memo to Republican U.S. Senator Steve Daines, Secretary of the Interior David Bernhardt said, quote, "The Department of the Interior has evaluated the core concerns and criticisms that have been raised with respect to the compact and found that these concerns were addressed in the negotiations," unquote. That memo was a response to an October letter from Daines, outlining arguments from a citizen group that proposed an alternative water compact last fall without input from the tribes, state, or federal government. Dubbed the People's Compact, that document limits tribal water rights and strips the tribes of all off-reservation claims. Last Friday, Attorney General William Barr said he too trusts the lengthy negotiations that went into forming the CSKT Water Compact.
I think this was the right kind of process to use, and I think it was a thorough process. I think it's a good outcome to that process.
Absent the compact, the tribe's claims could wind up in court, and both officials said an endless legal battle could lead to negative outcomes for all parties involved. Julia Doyle, spokesperson for Daines, says the comments from both Barr and Bernhardt reaffirm the need for a settlement.
The senator will continue engaging with stakeholders to reach an agreement that avoids litigation and protects the rights of all Montanans.
Republican state senator and gubernatorial candidate Al Olszewski, a longtime critic of the CSKT Water Compact, says he disagrees with Bernhardt and Barr. Among other claims, he says the compact grants the tribes too much water in too many places.
I respect them as a sovereign entity, that they should have self-determination. And their self-determination is for their people and for their reserved land, not off reservation. And I just ask for the same respect back for the people of Western Montana. That's all.
I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio.
Many parents in Montana are struggling to find affordable, high-quality care for their kids. Rachel Kramer reports on several providers in the Bozeman area trying to fill that gap, including one that says it has a big economic impact on the region.
Less than half of families in Montana have access to childcare, according to the state's Department of Labor and Industry. There aren't enough providers, and a lot of parents can't afford what's available. The average cost of infant care is over $9,000 per year and almost $8,000 for toddlers. That's more than in-state tuition at Montana's public universities. A mix of nonprofit after-school programs, city services, and private nannies are trying to puzzle together enough childcare to go around. At Meadowlark Elementary School in Bozeman, around 60 kindergarten through fifth graders are decorating turkey masks, making designs with melty beads, and playing board games. Avalon Piquette is in third grade.
And so what did you do today?
I made a bracelet of
rubber bands, and I went outside and played games. I made a beading.
What are some of the things that you like about this program?
Probably reading and recess.
Avalon is one of nearly 3,000 kids across Gallatin, Madison, Marr, and Park counties who participate in KidsLink, which tries to make sure no kid is left home alone after school and provides a safe and engaging environment. For $0 to $10 a day, kids learn about things like Lego robotics, 3D printers, and yoga. Avalon's mom, Diana, has come to the school to pick up her daughter. She says she works at a bank that closes at 5 p.m. This program didn't exist. What would you do?
I would probably have to get a different job or find some sort of nanny care that would cost me more money than I would be able to afford. So it would be a lot different lifestyle if this didn't exist.
KidsLink is largely funded by Greater Gallatin United Way. Here's its president and CEO, Danica Jamison.
We get calls from parents all day long at United Way. I say, I don't know what I would do without the KidsLink after school program.
Jamison says KidsLink is also essential for many businesses to stay open because parents don't have to leave work early to pick up their kids.
This includes almost 400,000 hours of workforce time gained, and we help keep $9.8 million in parents' pockets of additional pay because of that extra time they were able to work.
KidsLink is more affordable than most childcare options, but some parents will pay twice or three times the minimum wage for the flexibility of one-on-one care for their kids, especially infants.
It's not cheap to have a nanny in your home, but it is really convenient.
That's Carissa Erickson, owner and founder of 406 Nannies. She says she started the agency for people vacationing in Big Sky and quickly expanded it to Bozeman after getting daily calls. Erickson says without any advertising, the agency has grown 200% in the last year. Her two-person team manages 80 to 100 full and part-time nannies in Big Sky and the Bozeman area.
It sounds like a lot, but it's not enough. We need to double in size for the Bozeman area to be able to fulfill demand, because we currently have a wait list for part-time placements that we had to just cap, and we can't accept any more families to that list because we can't find the candidates.
Erickson says they've started hiring from out of state, partly because of Montana's labor shortage.
I was just noticing it kind of needs a little water, but they're in here.
Across town at the Story Mill Community Center, Holly Crane checks on a terrarium.
Oh, yeah. So the kids they're pulling these guys out and putting them on the table and playing with them and touching them.
Crane is Bozeman's assistant recreation manager and one of the leaders for the city's half-day preschool program.
We have so many great programs in this town, and every single business is doing an amazing job. So you really have to find your niche in this town. And for us at recreation, it is outdoor education and a little bit smaller programs, and the kids know that we're a family here.
Crane says Bozeman's recreation department only takes 15 to 20 kids in the preschool program to keep the quality of care high. The recreation department also offers summer camps and special events during school breaks when many people are still working. One of those is this Wednesday, when 40 kids will hike, play flag football, and make pies for $50 per kid. Like a lot of youth programs in Bozeman, Crane says spots fill up really quickly, so parents have to plan months in advance.
People start calling me in August or in July. When do I start registering for fall? September 1, it's live September 1. Same with summer. I'll start in January. I start get phone calls.
Crane says she can have 30 to 50 people on the summer program wait list. She says as Bozeman and its bedroom communities continue to grow, so too will the need for childcare. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
University of Montana ecologists are researching human-made beaver dams as a potential habitat restoration tool. Early case studies show the dams could dull the impacts of climate change seen in rivers and streams. The U.S. Forest Service is looking to use simple structures on new sites in the state, but first, officials want to better understand the science behind simulated rodent engineering. Montana Public Radio's Kevin Trevelin reports.
Beavers aren't called ecosystem engineers for nothing. Their dams can rebuild eroded streams and create lush wetland habitat suitable to elk and insect alike. Meanwhile, the dams create ponds that can store water longer in the face of drought. The benefits of beaver labor are so compelling that Western land managers have started copying their work, building what are known as beaver dam analogs, or BDAs. basically wooden posts pounded into a stream, then woven through with tree branches. Early work on the concept suggests these lookalike dams are a cheap and effective tool to replicate how beavers alter landscapes. But University of Montana aquatic ecologist Lisa Eby says many Western ecosystems no longer look like those occupied by beavers before settlers trapped them to near extinction. Eby thinks researchers need to learn more about how human-made beaver dams impact modern rivers and streams.
We're having to make these management decisions, and we're having to say, where should we put these BDAs? Where will they become problems? Where will they be successes? But we don't have the science behind it to really make the best informed decision we can.
That's why officials from the Lolo National Forest and Missoula-based conservation group Clark Fork Coalition approached Eby last year to install and monitor multiple BDAs at three test sites. The Forest Service is largely funding the multi-year project. Researchers have several big questions. One, how much water do these human-made dams actually store?
Especially during drought times, this should increase base flows that are good for not only fish and wildlife, but irrigation. But we don't know, is this just a drop in the bucket, or is this really building ecological resilience?
Researchers say beaver complexes can provide first-rate trout habitat, but it's unclear how well Montana's native West Slope cutthroat would navigate today's low river flows with human-made mimics. As for beaver ponds, their sun-drenched surfaces are warmer than rushing streams. Andrew Lahr, a PhD student in Eby's lab, says that could create better habitat for invasive fish already displacing native trout.
Here in Montana and across the western United States, they introduced eastern brook trout that have been really good invaders. They're able to inhabit places that have become warmer, too warm for cutthroat to be.
Lahr will track brook trout to see how analog dams affect their populations at the research areas. One of them is Teepee Creek on the Lolo National Forest, which received 13 BDAs for this project. Beavers once inhabited Teepee Creek's watershed. Forest Service officials recently found a natural dam built there sometime during the previous century. But the furry rodents are now less common in the forest. The streams look different. Some were straightened to build roads and mines, and it's difficult for beavers to raise dams in quick-flowing water. Tracy Silty with the Forest Service says human activity in the early 1900s probably eroded Teepee Creek, too. Surrounding land doesn't store enough water to support rich streamside habitat. Silty says that kind of degradation is common around western Montana.
Historically, our small streams have had a lot of impacts, whether that be by historic grazing and homesteading to roads and culverts and other means.
Another BDA research area, Fish Creek, is among those impacted waterways. PhD student Andrew Lahr says previous owners likely overgrazed the site. It's now managed by a national conservation nonprofit. Undergraduate volunteers were there on a recent fall Saturday to help researchers install 8 analog dams. On the floodplain, students with shears prune tree branches for others to stack across the muddy stream bed.
Okay. I think it looks great. Clearly holding back water. Beautiful.
Hand tools, piles of slash, it wasn't a sophisticated operation. Silty says that's central to the appeal of beaver dams.
Beavers work very simply. You know, you bring in an excavator for some of this work, you're working at $1,000 a day. And often disturbing the land a lot more than what's necessary to provide these resource benefits.
Silty says she has wanted to use BDAs in the Lolo National Forest for 15 years. She'll have to wait a little longer while scientists track changes at the test sites, seeing how well humans can replicate beaver dams and studying the potential consequences. Depending on the results, Katie Reset with the Clark Fork Coalition says the analog dam could have a place in the toolbox of agencies and nonprofits when repairing small streams in Montana. That's significant because most of the country's water comes from small creeks. Restoring them?
I think that is something that is going to be like a never-ending chore.
Which is why many are embracing the beaver as a self-sustaining land manager of sorts. BDAs are often placed near established beaver colonies so the buck-toothed squatters can move in to build and maintain their own dams. UM ecologist Lisa Eby prefers teaching to pounding sticks into the mud.
We don't want to be beavers for the next 50 years. Beavers are industrious, hardworking creatures.
It remains to be seen whether researchers can establish a beaver colony at the Fish Creek site, but it didn't take long to notice a slight change in the environment after the BDAs were installed. Water had already risen several inches around the new dams before the research crew left to peel away damp waders and hop in their trucks. Kevin Trevelin, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.